It's Wednesday, August 2nd. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, man. And joining me to do just that is one of my favorite people in the business from a person standpoint and also an analysis standpoint. It's Rich Rebar of Sharp Football Analysis. Rich, Lord Reeves himself. What's going on, buddy?
Matt, yeah, it's great that we get a chance to check in. It's been a while, I think, since the last season. You're one of also my favorite people to check in with. You know, I remember podcasting with you while I was, you know, in a townhouse in like my bedroom while you were at Backyard Banter. And, you know, Look at us now, man. I mean, you're out here podcasting, you know, with Austin Eckler, you know, making all these life moves. I'm so happy to see everything, like where you've come. Because I remember back then you kind of being like, well, you know, because you were a younger guy, you know, then, you know, you're a little age, you know, season now.
Just a little bit.
But I remember you kind of being like, you know, is this something I really want to do, you know, moving forward? And, you know, to see where you are now and what you've built, you know, at Reception Perception and at Yahoo and everything you're accomplishing in your life, I feel like you're in a really tremendous life space right now.
Thank you, man. I feel better than ever, honestly, about my career and everything. And, you know, even if there's always that little bit like, can I keep cheating? Like, you know, Dave Damaschek from NFL Network always used to put it that way. Like, just you're doing this, like you really feel like you're cheating life. And I hope to continue to feel that way. And, you know, I've been so happy to see you on the same path, man. I mean, personally, professionally, you look fantastic. I know you're feeling great. That's awesome to see. And yeah, it's again, and we won't sit here and just wax poetic about our friendship forever. But yeah, you're literally, like you said, I remember doing that podcast with you, and we can't say that without talking about Chad Scott, of course. Yep. The GOAT, Chad Scott, with the On the Fake Goods podcast in my Fairfax, Virginia apartment all the way back in the day. And now here I'm back in Virginia. It's like life comes full circle, man. And as long as we can keep doing this. Yeah, at 2023 or whatever, I'm like, man, how long do I want to do this? And now here, actually, you know, I'm not a big birthday person, but August 2nd, the day people are listening to this, is my birthday, my 32nd birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I could literally, if you hadn't brought this up, I wouldn't be saying that it is my birthday. But 32nd birthday, like now here at 32, flip those two numbers around. I'm like, dude, I don't want to do anything else ever. Are you kidding me? I don't know. I don't even know what I'd do at this point. We're talking about like a lack of skill set before we started this. Like, if we weren't talking about football, man, what the hell would we be doing?
Yeah, 100%. But no, we are truly blessed. I mean, we work literally in the toy store of life right now.
Yeah, there is no doubt about that. Hey, if you listened to yesterday's podcast, you already heard me kind of talk about this. But for those jumping back in, yes. New show, new intro. Unfortunately, same old me, literally 32 years old me. Now that we're on YouTube and everything, we have a Yahoo Fantasy TikTok, a Yahoo Fantasy Instagram. Of course, you should follow those, by the way. This certainly feels like more of a show than just a podcast, hence the new name and the new era of the show. We hope you like all of it. We hope you love the new music. We hope you love the new art. Please send me your feedback. I'd absolutely love to hear it. Well, of course, going to have the same faces that you're familiar with, you know, old favorites, Andy Behrens, Scott Pienowski, talk about literally old Andy Behrens, Dalton Del Don, of course, he will be here. And my guy, Austin Eckler, is back for another year of Eckler's Edge all season long. Watch out for him in a couple of weeks. But we're going to be mixing in plenty of fresh new faces, especially here in the month of August. And speaking of the month of August, we're back to being daily to get you ready for your drafts. And here's the plan for the month of August. We put a lot of time into mapping how this draft season is going to go, and we're breaking everything into weeks. This week is rankings week. Next week is going to be positions week, then convictions week, cram week right before that Labor Day draft period. And we're going to have plenty of mock draft podcasts sprinkled throughout. Again, the goal is to get you prepared for your drafts, assuming that most of them are going to be right around Labor Day weekend. But that's enough of business. Let's get right into the meat of the show. And Rich, we just talked about how grateful we are to be in this space. We talked about how much we love it and how could you imagine doing anything else? With all of that, like, please keep that in mind with what I'm about to say. I've had about enough of training camp highlight videos. I mean, my God, you know, first preseason game is this Thursday. Not that the Hall of Fame game is usually good for anything except getting people to screw up their Josh Jacobs rankings. But still, like, Rich, I can't see another, you know, route on air and be like, well, we all better change our minds about this. I know this is old man yelling at the cloud stuff, but like, I know you are, your best stuff is during the meat of the season, during like how do we adjust to things? This has to be a really frustrating time of the year for you. I know that is certainly the case for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with like, you know, Destroying's YouTube feed. He's like a popular YouTuber, but he runs like he was a UCF kicker and started his own YouTube channel, but he goes city to city and runs like these one-on-ones with DBs and wide receivers. Like people can just show up and try to win like $10,000. And that's like what's happening just with the NFL level. It's just like one-on-one drills, guys in space. Probably my favorite thing is like every clip from Falcons camp is a guy that's like got 10 yards of separation and they have to make the most acrobatic catch ever. Oh, I'm like, who the F is throwing this pass? Like everyone's like, did you watch Bijan cook that dude in space? I'm like, I watched that throw. I was like, I don't know who threw that ball, but I was terrified. I watched Drake London cook a dude and he's got like, you know, extend backwards. And I'm just like, what is happening at Falcons camp that like none of these guys are making these wide open throws? But yeah, it is tough, man, watching these guys on air.
It's funny too, because the Falcons actually are, and I've talked about the Falcons so much on the show, Rich, because I'm really in on that offense. Mm-hmm. So again, keep that in mind with what I'm about to say. But the Falcons are like the number one team on my radar about this for the exact reason you said, that a lot of, for number one, Bijan Robinson, like, you know, absolutely roasting these linebackers in coverage with like triple moves. If I'm the linebacker, I'm like, I'm going over to the social person and be like, don't post that. Okay. I know you're trying to hype up the first round pick and like the beat writers know this is going to get retweets and stuff, but like, come on, man, this guy's using three moves on me in a one-on-one drill. No way. Like that should be outlawed. Okay.
When have you ever seen a running back run a sluggo in a game? Like,
No. And look, maybe Arthur Smith is going to do it. Okay. Maybe Arthur Smith is going to have Bijan Robinson running sluggo routes and everything, but there are not a lot of three move routes from the running back position when they're one-on-one with a linebacker. That just is, it's crazy. And the same thing too, you know, Steve Smith, shout out to Steve Smith, one of my favorite players ever, is constantly like talking about the Falcons specifically, show me who's throwing the ball. Like when they've got to make these insane catches or whatever, like show me who's throwing the ball. But a couple of Falcons writers have pointed out like, oh, Desmond Ridder actually looks great. It's just like the clips that are getting out are the worst, like one of his worst throws of the day. Somebody said the Kyle Pitts one that everybody's been, you know, quote tweeting or whatever. That was like his only throw that hit the ground, but that's the only throw that made it on social media. So it's like, you know, I guarantee you one of these guys, you know, is going to get like some guy that's gotten all these great routes on air or whatever is going to get cut or be like on the bottom of the roster. And I don't wish that on anybody, but it's just the truth of it. People gonna be like, I thought he was having a great camp. No, you just saw one damn video of like routes on air. I can't do it.
Yeah, yeah, that happened yesterday with Jameson Williams. You know, there was reports was he is having a tough day, and then Detroit tweeted two clips. The Lions, I think it was the Lions' actual feed of him actually like he had like a crackback block at a dude that like freed a big run, and then he made like a toe tap sideline catch. But like every report from that day was like, oh, he's having like the worst camp, like worst day of camp. And then you get these two highlights. I mean, everything's got to be taken in and processed with a huge grain of salt right now.
Absolutely. And I think, look, I'm all in on like getting excited about players. And I do think, by the way, like you can get a real sense of certain guys like movement skills and athletic ability in those situations. It's just like we're talking rankings week here. You know, this is rankings week. Be careful about making too many adjustments.
Yeah, well, drop the right Allen now. Iverson, the Allen Iverson clip right here. Talking about practice.
100%. We're barely even talking about practice, for God's sakes, Rich. We're talking about one-on-one drills, you know? So this we've jumped the shark a little bit here. And that is my main message to people, is not like, ooh, crusty old man, get off my yard stuff. It's just be careful about what you're buying into right now, because it's not all reported. I mean, for God's sakes, reporters can't even watch most sessions of practice at this point. So that's another thing to be careful of. Only really one piece of news here to hit. We covered a lot of the Tim Patrick stuff in real time yesterday. That is a bummer for Tim Patrick. He's going to miss the entire season. KJ Hamler also not going to be part of the Broncos. So we don't have to dive into that here, Rich, but did want to just hit on this real quick, and because it kind of flew under the radar. Cowboys running back Ronald Jones is suspended for the first 2 weeks of the season for violating the PED policy. It's worth noting that I Ronald Jones, is he the biggest name? No, but he's the most, I would say, most established veteran on the roster right now outside of Tony Pollard. And for pure fantasy purposes, we are interested in this running back two battle because Tony Pollard, I don't know where you are on him. I'm in on where he goes in drafts. I think it's a really exciting proposition there, but not a guy that we've seen handle a ton of work. Is there a replacement here for Ezekiel Elliott as the banger back? Couple of guys to throw out here. Deuce Vaughn, obviously probably not going to be that guy, but he's, you know, a smaller change of pace guy. Malik Davis and Rico Dowd is getting some pop, especially from Mike McCarthy's, and he loves this guy. So any lean right now as to how this might go with Jones potentially missing the first 2 weeks and you know, I would say also probably on the roster bubble too.
Yeah, no, this is like a good example of like why we do and do plug into this stuff in the preseason and training camps, because this is a situation we want to see play out, you know, over the course of the preseason for some jostling, right? You know, see who's doing well with their reps, where are they getting their reps in terms of pecking order. And we saw this a couple preseasons ago, and obviously it was a guy that had, you know, some draft capital, but, you know, Trey Sermon was a guy who struggled throughout the preseason and really struggled, and it was there on tape for us to watch. And him getting, you know, moved down outside of the ones, and, you know, no one cared. We kept drafting him, and week one came and he was, you know, a healthy scratch, and the rest to be told by Trey Sermon. But this is one we want to watch play out. I would be shocked to see if they're like either of these guys ended up having like a ton of standalone value in season, like asking, like say like Tony Pollard, something happened to him and there would just be like an initial replacement. It'd probably be a sum of parts. Maybe that's when they would go out and get a veteran that was still on the streets. But I'm with you on Tony Pollard. I've made the commentary. I think he's literally the easiest second round click in drafts this year. It reminds me very much of the Austin Eckler situation when Austin Eckler got his contract from the Chargers and they let Melvin Gordon walk. And you walked into that offseason and people were trying to kind of talk themselves out of Austin Eckler that season. And it feels like that's almost the case with Tony Pollard, because I feel like in another year, like he's a slam dunk first round pick, right? Like we got everything we asked for, a hyper efficient player, one of the best offenses in the NFL, getting his chance. And like, he's just kind of locked in like a second round pick. And I feel he's the easiest click in the second round.
Yeah. I like that comparison a lot to Austin. Just makes so much sense, right? Like, and obviously there's an offensive coordinator crossover now. Kellen Moore is the offensive coordinator for the LA Chargers, so we'll see if there's any sort of you know, kind of connective tissue there. But I just think like it's pretty pure and simple. Like, we expect the Dallas offense to be good, right? We know Tony Pollard is good. It's kind of ironic that I mean he's a second round pick, he's going pretty high in fantasy, but Rich, people have been dying for this moment for Tony Pollard for a long time.
Yeah, and it feels like everyone's hesitant too. And you know, the Cowboys, I think, are very interesting because you hear some of the coaches' quotes on the surface of, you know, Mike McCarthy, you know, wanting to run the ball. Obviously, they hire Brian Schottenheimer. It's not very exciting, you know, given his past, but I think he's a guy that has definitely wanted to learn. I've got to do some stuff with him behind the scenes, and he's definitely a guy that's willing to learn and adjust. I think when you look at the Cowboys from a personnel stance, like this is a team like built to play like an 11 personnel and play open, right? Like this is like when you look at it top down from this roster stance, you add Brandon Cooks, who's definitely not washed. I even read the reception perception charts just to reinforce my stance on Brandon Cooks. And we've seen Brandon Cooks anytime he's played a functional quarterback play, he's been really good. You obviously CeeDee Lamb made the ascension last year of, you know, kind of being that full field wide receiver, just dominated and wrecked dudes in the slot all year. And you get Michael Gallup, who is a great kind of like role player in the NFL, being a wide receiver three, a year removed from his ACL surgery. And you take Dalton Schultz out of the lineup and Ezekiel Elliott out of the lineup, and you're removing kind of the two kind of like drains on that offense from last year. And like, this is a team I think that has a lot more excitement that I think people are buying in because of the Mike McCarthy, Brian Schottenheimer factor. The one probably worry is like this defense could be downright really good and kind of, and they could slow games down. But when you look at it from like their best personnel stance, like this should be an 11 personnel spread out team that should be slicing teams up.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the defense, because that is, I think, from a fantasy perspective, the biggest hang up about the team.
Yep.
With Mike McCarthy, it's tough because, and I'm glad you brought him up, because I have maintained the last couple of years that I think it's really difficult to like split what is Mike McCarthy and what is Kellen Moore. And I think the natural assumption on like fantasy Twitter, or NFL Twitter, is whatever is stupid is Mike McCarthy and whatever is smart is Kellen Moore. And maybe these two guys like just need to get away from each other to flourish, specifically with McCarthy, right? Like, you're talking about the 11 personnel stuff and like just spread it out and like run slant flats and a little more traditional West Coast stuff. That is McCarthy. Like, they should be that type of team, like stylistically under him. And you mean you bring up Dalton Schultz too. I there's a specific play that I always talk about with CeeDee Lamb, where you look at like his reception perception charts. They have him run a ton of post routes, and the success rate for him getting open on those routes is not great. I'd have to really go back and actually chart this, but I feel like every single time CeeDee Lamb like takes the linebacker up the field in zone coverage, that's like the Dalton Schultz hitch route, which, okay, we opened that hitch route up for Dalton Schultz, but like you said, how great is that for the offense?
Right.
We'll see if Jake Ferguson can be that guy. And that's Kellen Moore stuff to me. Like, all the tight end stuff is really, Kellen Moore's done great stuff with tight ends at times. So I'm interested to see these two guys split off. But yeah, from the defensive perspective, this defense looks awesome. They're loaded. You know, Micah Parsons is unblockable. They just re-signed Trayvon Diggs. Like, I think Stephon Gilmore can be the defensive equivalent of Brandon Cooks on the offense. Obviously, I liked both of those trades. If this is a top five defense, they're going to be in a lot more slow it down type of situations than we'd think about it than a team with like this sort of receiver right. core, receiver trio.
Yeah, 100%. And those are all these things like the factors, right? That's as much as we want to get excited too about Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets, like that's a factor, right? Like the Jets,
yep.
If the Jets defense is that good, and Rodgers is a guy that inherently plays slow anyways, he's a guy that he's bleeding that clock down, man. Unless you got 12 yep. on the field, that's the only time he snaps it early is when he catches you with that 12th man. But those are the things that kind of go into play, and it's more like range of outcome stuff. I think the Saints are like that type of team too. When you look at like their schedule, like the Saints have like such an amazing schedule, especially when you look at like their opposing quarterbacks, like the Saints face, especially like the opening mm-hmm. 6 weeks of the season. And we want to get excited about all these pieces on the Saints. You know, they add Derek Carr. Could they, be less conservative than they were a year ago? But what if they're just winning these games and they only have to throw the ball 25 times, right? Like it's something that always exists in the range of outcomes. You don't always say it's like gospel, and that kind of feeds into the theme of the show, like doing projections and ranges of outcomes. But like, yeah, so like you might have a thing like Chris Olave, right? You've got this great player. His range of outcomes easily could be, a top six wide receiver in terms of fantasy points, but he also could like be like the wide receiver 15 and a really solid player just due to a volume crunch by default of the Saints just being really good. Right. Like, so that exists in the range of outcomes. So we've got all of these different things in play. Things like offensive line and defenses don't get talked about enough when talking about, fantasy situations, but they are things that definitely incorporate because they impact play volume for sure.
Yep. That's such a huge thing when you're making projections, which, as you said, is the theme of the show. It's a perfect time to transition to that conversation. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. All right, Rich, everything you just said before we took that break is exactly why I wanted your brain on this particular episode here, talking about what is the difference between projections and rankings. Because I think to maybe like the average fantasy player, or maybe most fantasy consumers, the assumption is you go in and do your projections, for every team, league wide, whatever, and that spits out your rankings basically, but that's not necessarily the case. I know that's certainly not the case for me. And I do projections every year. I've done them, I think, every year since 2016. And I'm not going to sit here and say that like, oh, I've got the most in-depth projections formula, but I at mm-hmm. least want to, use it to help me keep myself honest when making my rankings. So to you, Rich, what is kind of the difference between projections and rankings from a high level view?
Yeah, this is interesting from a top-down stance because I think this is still the largest hurdle that fantasy content creation, fantasy consumption needs to bridge because it's so nebulous. The internet loves lists anyways, but yeah. I think the average consumer of fantasy football rankings is looking at a linear list of players and they're consuming projections from a points created stance as a linear list of these are rankings. But we don't always know what rankings are from the content creation side, right? Like, mm-hmm. are they something on Fantasy Pros designed to win a contest? Because that's different. That's a game within itself. Are they ranking saying that these are the orders I would take selected players? I can tell you right now that even my own personal rankings, I don't always follow linearly. Like, team structure and nuance matters. But like, as a consumer, if you buy, you know, my product or have myself in a magazine, you're going to go down that linear list and say, well, like, you told me by based on this list, you like James Cook more than Dalvin Cook. But you took Dalvin Cook over him. Why was this? And you know, why did you lead me astray and all these things? So I think that with it still just being so nebulous and so gray, and one, even what rankings are and how they're consumed, like, this is what makes them so faulty, I think, as a just a top-down part of our industry. But they're literally an SEO driver, a content creation driver. So like, it's never going to go away because it's such a consumption factor. But it's so big because I can do like make you a list and say, these are my top 10 favorite Martin Scorsese movies. And you clearly know these are how I rank Martin Scorsese movies. But for fantasy football rankings, like, it's very, very gray in terms of like, you know what you're getting out of the list and what that means. So I think from a top down stance, just initially, it's a huge barrier still in our industry. And it sucks because it's literally the most popular part of the industry.
I'm glad you took it that way because it's a great like thing for, I think, consumers to hear us kind of struggle with. Because look, I used to rail against rankings, and again, the theme of what we talked about at the top, like me growing up a little bit, it's like, okay, I used to like, I'll never do rankings. Okay. You know what I'm doing now? I'm doing rankings. Like, I mean, my dad, like, I got dynasty wide receiver rankings. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm doing redraft rankings and all that stuff. I used to say, I'd never say welcome to the show. And with the new show, I'm like, you know what? Time to grow up, get over your little hangups. Okay. So, and a lot of it is, like you said, the popularity, the desire from the consumer for rankings. And even sometimes for me, I'm like, all right, just put it in a freaking list. Okay. Like, let me just tell you who I like I like this guy better. And I say it all the time too, when you talk like ranking real life receivers, great example, like you can do your top 10 receivers. And it's like, okay, well, I like AJ Brown or I like Jamar Chase better than I like Cooper Kupp. But they play like two different positions, you know, basically they approach the wide receiver position so entirely differently. And that is certainly the case, definitely within the receiver position. But I think all positions, and you've talked about this for years, Rich, like how these guys accumulate their points mm-hmm. is different. Certainly, again, within the receiver position, but within all these positions. And from a linear rankings perspective, how do you account for that? Like you can, I do tiers. I love doing tiers, but even within a tier, unless you're going to dive that much deeper into it, how do you account for like telling somebody, hey, this guy's going to be a little more safe from a weekly perspective. This guy's going to be a little bit more volatile. That's another flaw of the ranking system.
Yeah, 100%. That's why I said, like, you know, even as someone that creates rankings, I mean, I always don't follow them because there is some nuance in terms of drafting. You know, what's the format? You know, how did I start my draft? What spot am I picking from? You know, did I expect a run on a position to happen that, you know, that never happened. Like there's all these things that kind of like play out into like what you do in a draft. That's why I have them separated. You know, I have projections and I have rankings and I have tiers, and tiers I think are where like my bread and butter is, because that's where you said, like, that's where I archetype my guys. And I glom up these archetypes of players, because that's how you can find you spot your arbitrage in fantasy drafts, right? When you have players that are used similarly, or maybe even in similar types of offenses, but they're like, there's giant gaps in terms of, you know, ADP. For example, like let's run through a couple examples of like what I'm talking about. So we have Jahmyr Gibbs. He's the RB12 currently in fantasy drafts, right? He's in a good mm-hmm. offense. That we know is going to be good. He plays indoors. He's a receiving back. He has questions on what his workload would be on early downs and at the goal line, because those questions existed in college. You have a player down the line in ADP about 14 spots lower in DeAndre Swift. Similar spot, right? We know he's an efficient player. We know he has questions about early downs. He plays the mobile quarterback as well, no difference, but it's an offense we want a part of, and it's a great offensive line. It's hyper efficient. A couple spots below DeAndre Swift, you have James Cook. Good offense. Great receiving pedigree, was a really good receiving back as a rookie. Does he get goal line carries with Josh Allen and Damian Harris? But you put all these guys together, like they're very similar archetype of players, but the ADP is widely different from all, even though they're in good offenses and stuff. Now, from a projection stance, Jahmyr Gibbs is ranked the highest because his median is the easiest to diagnose, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's playing with Jared Goff. We know that Jared Goff throws a ton to running backs, whereas the other two situations, you know, we have to kind of, there might be a target squeeze. So he, from a projectable stance, his ADP follows, but from an arbitrage stance, like, there is an absolute outcome where DeAndre Swift competes with him, and there is an absolute outcome where James Cook competes with him, because they are the same types of players, and they are in very much offenses that we want attachment to. So that's kind of what you do. And, you know, stuff like slot receivers or X receivers and stuff like that, like how these guys score their points, you put these together, and then you can start to find these gaps in ADP where, like, if I'm building a team, I can get a similar player to this player here. And then that's how you kind of try to layer that in, and you get a little more nuanced take where you're just like, well, I do have Gibbs ranked there, but man, I can get two bites at the apple, maybe with Swift and James Cook later at a similar type player. So maybe I'll structure my team like that, pass on Jahmyr Gibbs. Maybe I'll go with a big wide receiver here or something else. Like, there's all these little kind of nuances. I'm not trying to make it sound like fantasy football is like a Darren Aronofsky film, but like these layers here that go into things.
100%. And I think the way you're thinking about that tier, that like tiers there, is different than certainly just how we do tiers when we're ranking.
Yeah, people players, just section right? rankings off.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's what I do, right? It's like, okay, Jahmyr Gibbs, great example. Like, he's going to probably be what in like the same tier as, you know, like Travis Etienne or something like that, right? Like, I mean, again, Aaron Jones, like that, those type of guys. But from like an arbitrage standpoint, I totally see what you're saying. Like, yeah, James Cook, who's going to go rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds later, who's not going to be listed in that same tier. It's almost like we should have tiers and then like archetypes. I do want to do this with like real receiver rankings, because similar to like what I said, mm-hmm. Cooper Kupp's going to be like the number one ranked slot receiver by like a country mile, right? But is he going to be the receiver 7 overall? Like, how do you give him credit for being the best of this archetype, like by a lot, even if he's, you know, and then how do you compare that within the entire range of players? It's really sort of like, it does get very nebulous and very in the weeds here, but it's a great way of thinking about when you're drafting teams and you want to build these like complementary rosters.
Yeah, 100%. So like when we're doing projections, you know, obviously if you start with projections first, because that's where we're going to kind of let the dog walk here before we get to like the maybe splitting some things off. Like, literally projections are just like checks and balances, right? Like, we know that NFL plays are finite, and therefore mm-hmm. touches in an offense are finite. Like, you're going to hear this a lot over these next 4 weeks, especially with camps opening up. You'll hear a beat reporter say, you know, I believe so-and-so is going to catch 100 balls this year, right? But remember, they have no skin in the game in terms of actual projections, right? So like, how many, what's this player's like historical like targets per route run? Like, who is he competing targets with? There's like all these things that could lead to be like, well, that's kind of impossible. It's easy to say flippantly, like, this guy's mm-hmm. looking good, he'd catch 100 balls, but again, targets are fine. Like, the 49ers are probably like the largest example of this, right? Because like,
yes,
they have all these players that are just hyper talented, like amazing talents. You know, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Christian McCaffrey, right? But this is a team that doesn't run a lot of plays. They don't throw the ball a lot when they do run plays. And then like there exists in like the range of outcomes, although it appears very small at this point, that they will have a mobile quarterback play and take snaps for them. But they're like all these things, like when you're projecting the 49ers, there's like a finite, again, plays and touches you can distribute. And you're just like, then you start to see the squeeze and you're like, well, you're like, man, like these are really good players. But when you rank them, you might not, so they don't show up in projections as well, is what I'm saying, right? As they mm-hmm. as they may be from a talent perspective be perceived, but that doesn't mean that they don't exist in the range of outcomes still hitting those ceilings, right? And you have to factor that into rankings versus projections. You know, what if Deebo Samuel misses a 4-week stretch? What does that do for Brandon Ayuk? I mean, look at Brandon Ayuk's numbers when Deebo Samuel's off the field versus with him and on it. Same thing with George Kittle, right? So like, you have to say like, well, in the range of outcomes, like, yeah, these scenarios exist in NFL season. Not everyone's playing 17 games. Things are tricky in that front. Mm-hmm. So you might elevate a guy a few spots because his range of outcomes is better than his projection. So those are things that kind of like go into it when you're kind of diagnosing rankings from just saying like following a linear list of points scored and saying, I'm going to put them in this exact order. This is how you should draft them. Because here's the beauty and curse of fantasy football. I could give you, Matt, I can give you every player's statistics from the season, right? Here are the full 17 game statistics for every player. And you would be able to have our edge in drafting really well. But if you don't know the distribution of those points, you could still lose. Because you know, even like fantasy points aren't scored on a bell curve, right? Like player averages, like it's a scattershot game. You could have a player score 30 points in one game, 10 in another game, and 5 in another. And you say, well, you average 15 points per game. But one of those weeks won you a week, right? Like, and definitively swung a game for you. So like, even knowing from a projection stance, saying like, well, these guys look like values from an overall stance, you can use that as checks and balances. But if you don't know the distribution of those, like production, you still might not have absolutely anything.
So many great points there. Specifically on the 49ers example, it's like, I challenge you to try to get them higher than like 25th in pass attempts this year. If you're doing projections, it's difficult. It's actually funny. Shanahan has been like remarkably consistent. I found this funny when I was doing projections for the team this year. The last 3 years, 1,046 plays. The next year, 1,046 plays. The year after that, 1,047 plays. Just kind of funny. I just have to point that out, how like steady that has been the last 3 years for the 49ers. But it's a great example of like, and I think there is some subjectivity in projections too. Somebody that is a big Brandon Ayuk guy, like hypothetically, if this person was out there, you know, like they might be like, you know what? I think this is the year Ayuk from a talent perspective, like takes a step and is just better than these guys. So let me build in a little bit of a boost for him. And also accounting for what you said, that from a games missed perspective, and this is hard because injuries are inherently like can happen to anybody. Like Ayuk could, knock on wood, like Ayuk could get hurt this year, even if Deebo Samuel doesn't, like that whole thing. So there is some subjectivity to the rankings part of it. But really the home run point that you had there, Rich, is like, where do those points come from? And I think we're really bad at talking about that in the preseason for sure.
No,
yeah. And when we're looking back, we're bad at it too. It's like, this guy was the wide receiver 12 last year. Even Ayuk is a great example. Like Ayuk led the team in receiving yards last year. Well, yeah, he's the guy who played all year. He didn't get hurt at any point last season. The other guys did. And I still think Ayuk's a great player, but that's a part of like, we're bad about looking back at it that way. We're also bad about thinking that it carries over. I think this is where mistakes are made with both fantasy analysis and NFL analysis. In NFL analysis, you see it with like, oh, this team finished like 3-1 in their last 4 games. Like, that doesn't mean anything when coming into this year. I mean, it means something, but it doesn't mean everything, right? Like, it doesn't mean that this team is going to carry over that momentum. And with players too, Jerry Jeudy is a great example. And I say this because I'm like kind of lower than consensus on Jerry Jeudy, but so maybe take that with a grain of salt here with what I'm about to say. But guy had 972 yards and 6 touchdowns last year, and people point that out. It's like, okay, well, you know what? He did almost all of that damage from weeks 13 to 18, right? You know, a lot, like if you had Jerry Jeudy going into last year and he's going to, you know, have 972 yards and 6 touchdowns, you'd feel pretty good about it. But you didn't feel good about it the first few weeks of the season, right? And I also think too that, again, just because he did that in those last 6 games or whatever doesn't mean that momentum is going to naturally carry over into this year. It's just that these buckets and chapters of the season are what they are. But again, carrying it over from one year to another from a projection standpoint can be dangerous. And that's honestly why sometimes I like doing projections, because you just look at it from a year over year standpoint and, you know, it kind of keeps you balanced a little bit.
Yeah, and one thing that projections really help too is because they're typically median outcomes for players. They hone you back in on like the base rate of like a player's career or base rate of like the league, because we're always going to have these outliers every NFL season, right? Like, you know, not to make this like a 49ers centric show, but like take like Deebo Samuel's 2021 season for example, and like how special it was compared to the context of his entire career, right? Like in his terms of, you know, depth of target, his yards per catch, like all these things are, when as Deebo Samuel continues to flesh out his career sample, just look like one-offs, right? But, you know, a lot of people took that as kind of like, well, this is kind of what he is. And that factored into his projection last year. And then default, you know, factored into his ranking last year, and was one of the more overdrafted players last season because, you know, people thought that was going to be a norm. So it's great too to have like that checks and balances from that stance too, especially when players do things kind of outside of like their career buckets. And you know, you talk about the season long stuff, and I have railed on this for years. It's something that I've harped on, like, well, one, because contextually, like, what is saying someone was the RB9 even mean, right? Or saying someone was the RB17 or the wide receiver 12, like, contextually, what are you telling me? I don't think people are like really have a definition of that. And it definitely doesn't mean that a player was value, right? Because he was drafted at wide receiver 20 and was the wide receiver 12. Sure, he beat ADP, but what does that entail? And you're not even telling me what the actual wide receiver 12 was. For example, like say Joe Mixon was the RB10 last year. You look at his surface, he had 270 touches, 1,250 yards, 9 touchdowns. Looks really good, right? If that's from a projection stance, you're like, and from a finishing stance, you're like, that's really good. That's a solid NFL season. Ask anyone that rostered Joe Mixon last year if he was the 10th best fantasy football running back. I guarantee you will get an overwhelming no response. On the flip side, Cam Akers was the RB17 in terms of draft ADP last year. He was the RB35 in overall points. Guess which one of those two players actually impacted fantasy football outcomes last season for fantasy championships? It was the latter guy. Christian Watson, a guy, he's the wide receiver 42 in overall points, but his stretch of the season where he was churning out multiple wide receiver one scoring weeks, like he impacted the fantasy season. So you might have a guy like, let's use an example like I used in an article on my site, Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin projects to be better than ADP for me. He projects better than where he's ranked across sites. But if Chris Godwin is going at the wide receiver 25, and I have him at the wide receiver 17, and he ends up as the wide receiver 17, is that a win because I ranked him there? Now, what type of wide receiver 17 season is he? Is he a wide receiver 17 just because he didn't get hurt and give baseline production for 17 weeks? Is he a guy that gave me spike weeks and was volatile and was a wide receiver 17, but he helped me win weeks? Like there are all these different kind of layers that go into it where the wide receiver 17 can mean multiple different things, right? Mm-hmm. But you hear and see this stuff used as analysis all the time, where a guy's being drafted, where he finished. None of it matters. It matters for like literally 1 to 3 players at like every position, like per season, like guys that are good from weeks 1 through 17. Other than that, you have to be in on the right pockets of production during an NFL season. And that's just impossible to calibrate before the season.
Impossible. And I think what we miss too, and this is one of my hangups, is okay, beyond, I've tried to just not even say like this guy was the wide receiver, whatever, this guy was the RB, whatever, just because it can be missing so much of the contextual details that you mentioned. I also bring it back to, and again, I'm using Jerry Jeudy as an example. I'm sure people are going to be sick of me talking about this, but you think of those like pockets of production. I'm also like, tell me what the team was doing during that standpoint. Like the Cam Akers thing, tie it into there. Like they kind of found an offensive identity there towards the end of the year with Cam Akers. Like that matters, I think, to me a little bit. With Jerry Jeudy, like on the flip side of literally that same game, like 51-14, they get blown out by the Rams and Jerry Jeudy has 117 yards. Like, does that carry over into the next year? Right. Like, I'm not saying like all production, you know, garbage time production or anything is bad or whatever, because it all kind of counts the same for fantasy. But I think it matters from projecting the team year over year. And you brought up the Bucks, and that was going to kind of be my next question here, was around the Bucks or whatever, because they're definitely a team that depending on how much you want to account for the Baker Mayfield, Kyle Trask disaster, can project really well. Even like Rashad White, you know, if you just kind of project some of his usage from last year, he looks out like probably better than where his ADP is. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, like their historical production, you kind of project that out, like it looks pretty good. Even just if you're using head coaching history, like the last few years, the Bucks have ran a ton of plays, they've passed the ball a ton. But how do we account for what I think are going to be some clear changes in Tampa Bay? And you can use a different team as an example if you find one better, but it just, like, that's one thing I struggle with projections is, all right, how do we fully account for this? Because this stuff is all new. Not only is Baker Mayfield new to the Bucks are new to Baker Mayfield. Like, is he going to be what type of player is he going to be in this environment? I think that can be really difficult when trying to do projections too, because you might end up getting these guys looking good even if you don't necessarily want to draft them.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a way to play that. So you might, like I said, if you want to use like Chris Godwin as an example, so you say like, all right, if you say he ends up being the type of player that just beats ADP, but he's not like a weekly difference maker, it doesn't mean like those guys still can't be valuable to your roster, right? Like you always hear this all the time, like, you know, like this guy has no upside, right? Like, but those guys still can be glue guys depending on like how your roster. Say you're someone that started out running back heavy, the draft fell that way, and you need to get like targets and baseline production at your position. Like you might need a guy like that on your roster. Yeah. So the way I use that is if a guy projects better, but I'm still hesitant as outcome, like Godwin's, in this case. I'm still going to be above him on rankings, but I'm going to calibrate him into a spot like where I would kind of like be looking to take him from an archetypical stance, like in like a team building stance. And I try to lay that out in like the actual tiers that I write up of saying like, you know, hey, in this example, you know, I started out, you know, Nick Chubb, and, you know, I followed that up with, you know, Derrick Henry. I ended up chasing the position a little bit because maybe I took a tight end or quarterback in one of those rounds. So now I'm chasing wide receiver. I need to get reliable targets and baseline production, and then I can take some swings at wide receiver around those guys and maybe add guys like, you know, a Treylon Burks or like a, you know, whatever, you know, I'm just, you know what I'm saying? And I need to get those targets. So I'm going to look at a guy like Chris Godwin or Deontay Johnson or like, you know, a guy that I know, like, hey, I'm getting these targets every week. Like, I just need to know I have this baseline of production. He fits structurally those team builds. So yeah, that's kind of like how you try to incorporate that stuff into, you know, using your projections for rankings and then for actual drafting. And you brought up like just like the player changes. Like, there are so many like situations too. Like, the Vikings are a great example, I think, coming into this year, like where people look at like all these routes run the Vikings had and like how many pass attempts they had. And they played in like some of the most like tear down hell like scape game scripts like we've ever encountered, right?
Yeah.
Like they scored 19 touchdowns in the fourth quarter last year out of necessity. I mean, they won all these games out of necessity in the fourth quarter. What if like they just have more neutral game scripts, right? Like, you know, then you start to see some of the efficiency stuff, like a guy like TJ Hockenson. It's really easy to look at TJ Hockenson from the top down when he joined the Vikings and say like, oh, this dude is behind Travis Kelce, like in every single counting stat. But then you're like, well, how did he get there? Oh, he ran the most routes in the NFL. His target share per route run wasn't anything special. His yards per target wasn't anything special. His yards per catch weren't anything special. It was literally all volume. What if that volume gets pulled away? What if Jordan Addison has a larger role, right? Like, these are all things you have to incorporate like into the outcome now for TJ Hockenson from a 2023 range of outcome stance, projection stance, that a lot of gamers are just going to like, that dude helped me win the last 8 weeks last season. I mean, he's got to be like the tight end two or three, right?
Yeah. And projecting that year over year, as we said, is very difficult because those changes are going to have the play volume stuff and the way these like the environments these teams play in, I think, is the part that gets overlooked the most. And how is that going to be year over year? The Eagles are another example, right? Where they were just, you know, pummeling teams last year, pummeling these teams.
Jalen Hurts had as many fourth quarter pass attempts last year as Cooper Rush.
I mean, give me a break. Like, what are we talking about here? And that is probably not going to happen this year for a variety of reasons. Just natural regression. You know, maybe Jalen Hurts takes a small step back. I mean, shoot, you don't even have to take a small step back as a player to just like end up being in more of those situations. Like, you know, there's turnovers on defense, both coordinators turnover. You know, maybe the Eagles just hit a small, maybe there's a Super Bowl hangover, that type of stuff. You never know. There's all kinds of sort of unknowable factors there that could end up putting them in game scripts where, you know what, maybe like Devonta Smith and AJ Brown, we know this is a concentrated offense. What if they're just getting like routinely 8 to 10 targets a game? Like, both of those guys are just getting that volume pushed their way all the time in these more pass first game scripts. And then there's more upside than it appears to those teams, even if those situations wouldn't be necessarily great for the Eagles in real life.
Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, that's kind of the nuance that goes into it. And that's what's great about the checks and balances stance too, is you can also play with range of outcomes and projections. Like you said, you might be, you know, higher on Brandon Ayuk, for example. Like, you can see what Brandon Ayuk looks like with a 25% team target share, a 20% target share versus like an 18%, right? Like, you can see like what the offense looks like, and you can kind of see that visually and do that from a checks and balance stance, as opposed to just doing guesswork of saying, I believe this guy can catch 100 balls, right? Like, you'll hear some commentary. You can actually see what the actual numbers look like and how it impacts the other pieces of the offense. So if you're betting on Brandon Ayuk, right, then who are you betting against? Because then there's a trickle-down question, you know, right? Like, that all comes into play. Because if you're giving those targets somewhere, they have to come from somewhere else. And that's what, like, a lot of people, you know, don't do. And it's a lot harder. It's great about some of these teams that you brought up, like the Eagles, that have these concentrated target trees. Because we kind of know, like, no matter how the play volume, like, dissipates, like, we know, like, they're throwing the ball to these three guys.
Yeah, that's so great, too, about this, you brought up Keenan Allen is great. Over the years, I know you've talked about this, and like, Keenan Allen's a great player. But a lot of that is the volume he needs to produce in that role, that he needs to put up big fantasy seasons. And okay, so if you're going to be in on Keenan Allen this year, like, like you said, you probably can't be that excited about Quentin Johnson. Like, can you be in on Mike Williams at ADP, or is Justin Herbert just going to have some kind of like nuclear season and he's, you know, going to be the QB1 this year or something like that?
Because you hear it right now in camp, right? Justin Herbert's going to throw the ball downfield more this year under Kellen Moore, right? Here's the hang up though. And I'm not absolving Joe Lombardi from this equation at all. If your top two targets in your offense, if the top two players that are earning targets in your offense are your running back and slot receiver, your depth of target is not going to be high if those are your top two targeters. So if you're betting on Justin Herbert increasing his A dot to a substantial amount, then you have to be betting on either Austin Eckler or Keenan Allen to take a step back in terms of target value. Because if those guys continue to be the top two targets in this offense, his ADOT is not going to like really significantly change, because that's where the ball goes, right? Like, the ball goes to your best players from a top down stance. And sometimes that changes on a weekly level. Like last year, by default, the Chargers' best players for a large stretch of games were Austin Eckler, Josh Palmer, and DeAndre Carter. That was and Gerald Everett. Like, those were the best players that they had to distribute the football to. Guess what? None of those guys are earning targets anywhere downfield. I'm not trying to give Joe Lombardi a hall pass, but that's why Justin Herbert's ADOT was where it was last year. That's how you torpedo a depth of target. Daniel Jones is another great example who had an ADOT actually below Justin Herbert's. When all you're doing is running bootlegs to Sterling Shepard, but we saw Daniel Jones's ADOT start to rise a little bit when Isaiah Hodgins came on, right? Like, they had more of an outside the perimeter type player. Darius Slayton got involved a little bit, but the targets were never there. But people always think like of that stuff as being a quarterback slap, but the Chargers are a great example. So if you're betting on Justin Herbert rising his ADOT, then you should be betting on Mike Williams or Quentin Johnston exceeding, you know, draft value.
Yeah, the push and pull between the receiver and the ADOT stuff is so crucial. You mentioned Deontay Johnson earlier. That's a guy that I always think about, that like, I think this guy could be used farther down the field. And he had a higher ADOT last year than he did under some of like the Big Ben pop gun offense seasons, you know, but like, how high is that going to be? And then again, if you're betting on Deontay Johnson, how hard are you betting against George Pickens? How hard are you betting? And like, I like Deontay Johnson. I also really like drafting Pat Freiermuth this year. Does that make sense from a projection standpoint? Because those two guys are probably going to be used in similar areas of the field. And that's another thing you have to think about as well.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like I said, there's always a give and take. It's always just not looking at these, these situations. You know, obviously DeAndre Hopkins just signs with the Titans, right? And everyone's like, well, this caps the target ceiling for Chigozima Okonkwo and Treylon Burks. You know, what if the team has more passing volume? You know, where are these guys earning targets? For me, like, it just totally squashed a guy for like taking like DraftKings, like taking Kyle Phillips in like the 20th round. Like, that's off the menu now. So like that's the killer. But like, you look at like where the bar is set at each position too. So like, you have a guy like Okonkwo, and like, it caps like his overall target scheme, but like, the dude still plays tight end. Like, if he's going at tight end 13, like, what is the bar for him to clear that like actually like entail? Or like, you know, there's like a lot, like I said, that goes into this outside of just like ranking a player and kind of think of like all these things that kind of go out. Like, what if Will Levis plays, right? All of these different, you know, scenarios exist in these scenarios that you have to run yourself through that aren't going to show up in full top-down projections. They're always not going to show up in rankings. You just try to do your best to kind of account for these, especially when you're doing your team building, which is literally the most important part of this whole equation here outside of following a linear list. And that's basically my thing. I try to just drill down to people. You should not be drafting off of a linear list. That's really kind of circles back to how we opened.
Yeah, so let's talk about linear lists here before we get out of here, though. Taking some of that projection stuff and then formulating it into rankings. Just kind of take me through your process of, all right, we've got projections, we're putting them into rankings, and how can we, I guess, how can, as content creators, knowing some of the flaws that rankings can, some of the things we've outlined here, the flaws and mistakes when making rankings, the flaws and mistakes that can be made when you're reading and consuming rankings. What can we do to make that better or to get around some of those?
It's tough, man. My real answer is I wish that rankings would stop being so damn important, but I know that that's not going
to
happen.
Stop clicking on them.
So I need you guys to stop clicking on these lists because I feel like there's no blanket answer I can give you, right? Like, Because it's going to be nebulous for every person that does rankings. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? There's no like defined, and there shouldn't be. Like, I shouldn't be able to tell Matt Harmon how to do his rankings. You should be able to tell Richie Rodd to do his rankings, right? That's why, at least in my player tier section, I try to walk through the scenarios of, if you're drafting a team, this is what you should be looking for at this point. You know, if your league format is such and such and you open this way, this is where this player makes sense. This is where avoiding this player may make sense. That's really the only way you can get to it. It's like kind of do like that level of handholding, but on just a list of players with numbers next to them. I mean, we really can't do it.
Yeah. Even the tiers, right? Like, great example, receiver stuff. Like, we're talking about these guys who project really well from like a baseline target perspective. You mentioned that earlier. I would look at like where I've got guys projected right now. I think Deontay Johnson fits into that bucket. I think Michael Pittman fits into that bucket. I think Chris Godwin fits into that bucket. Keenan Allen, I think, fits into that bucket. But even so, let's say that's a tier. I'm not saying that's going to be like my tier of receivers, but let's just say that's a tier of receivers. I would have to sit there and tell you, do I think Deontay Johnson has a better chance? Like, Kenny Pickett takes a step and, you know, he can, all those targets that he's going to get, they're actually going to be much more valuable than usual because I like the player's ability and I like his skill set and stuff like that. Is that more likely than Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask doing in Tampa Bay? Yeah, I probably think so. Yeah, I think so. So he might be ahead of Godwin in that tier for me. Anthony Richardson, like, what do I think about him changing the complexion of the Colts offense? But also, Michael Pittman, like, he's going to get, you know, 100 and something targets again. I mean, he got, you know, just an absolute boatload last year. I think he's going to get a good amount this year. Do I think Anthony Richardson has a better shot of outkicking that type of thing? You know, Keenan Allen, like, am I going to end up ranking Keenan Allen lower than all of those guys? Is he going to be the last one in that tier? Which seems crazy, but because I really like the surrounding cast of that offense a lot to draw targets away from him. So even within the tiers, though, that's still an awful lot of handholding that I'm never going to be able to do in just a document sense.
Yeah, because no matter what happens, when you're on the clock to make a fantasy football draft selection, you have to pick an individual player.
Right.
And you're always going to want to feel good about that individual player you're picking and make some kind of pro case for that player. But again, like I said, the level of nuance that goes into it, like I said, I'm not trying to make it sound like we're that important and like we are not, you know, picking this fancy wall as like this highbrow level of complexity. It really isn't. But there are a lot of things that people like don't take into account, you know, when they are making actual draft picks, they're just picking players.
And if I can be honest, from the content creation standpoint, especially from a weekly sense, right? Like, yo, you get inundated with a bunch of questions, you know, from, and because however many people follow you on Twitter, however many people listen to your podcast, however many people are in your Discord, subscribe to your site, read your articles, whatever, watch you on Fantasy Football Live, or, you know, read Rich Rebar, you know, subscribers of Sharp Football, like, you can't sit there and do this level of nuance with everybody because there are 24 hours in a day. There are 365 days in a year, and there's just not enough time. And by the way, the whole year is not football season. So it's just like you can't help everybody in that way. And now I feel like I'm getting, so it's just like, all right, well, you know what? This guy I've got a 15. This guy I've got a 16. Take the guy at 15. Okay. So sometimes, honestly, as a content creator, that's what it comes down to, even though that's, as we're sitting here saying it, it's not the right way to do it.
No, 100%. I mean, that's why I do try to do a lot of the content I do and have done over the years is more trying to teach people how to play fantasy football. So you don't need me, right? Like, I'd rather teach you how to fish than give you a fish. I definitely want you to keep subscribing to myself and buy my things. Keep me employed. But also, like, I try to do this as like, here's all the information you have to make the most educated opinion, you know, that you can make. But also, like, this is why the stuff will always do well that's individual player based and rankings based and stuff. But like, I try to focus on creating a lot of content that's not that, you know, general game theory, you know, top down team building and stuff like that. I think just because, like I said, I want you to be able to fish on your own.
And I think you're great at that. I think JJ Zacharyson obviously does all his work now. Later on quarterback does a great job of that. It's the part from like a fantasy analyst standpoint, which is why I wanted to have, you know, someone like you on the show, Rich. I think I talked about this with Dalton yesterday. I'm not good at like even the strategy stuff. It's not my favorite thing. I love talking about players and I love focusing on players. I love focusing on teams. you know, in the rankings is a whole other thing. I'm not into that either, but like, it's having that ability to teach people that is a reason why I wanted you on this show today, because I think I know we're sitting, I'm sure there are people now that have listened to this 50 minutes of this podcast or whatever, and are like, well, these guys have basically sold me on not, this is too complicated. Like, am I even going to read the rankings? Am I going to read the thing? But part of it is just, telling you to take everything, I think, with some level of a grain of salt in all of this. And really what I'd love for people to listen to this, Rich, and get from both of us is like, think for yourself. Okay. Mm-hmm. Both Rich and I put rankings out and tiers out and all this stuff, but we are not telling you to follow that as gospel. And I think anybody that is, like, you should be kind of skeptical of that, because I think part of this game is so, part of what makes football so beautiful is that, I was watching an interview with Dan Campbell yesterday and just talking about how much it's like a team sport, and 10 guys can get it right, the 11th guy gets it wrong, and the entire thing goes to hell. You know, like, that's what's great about football. That's what makes the game beautiful, is the unpredictable nature of it, and how dependent other players are to get production, the thing that fantasy gamers care about, points. Like, that, so much has to go right that we can't really account for. So I would just say, the theme of this all is think for yourself and be kind of open-minded to taking this with a grain of salt.
Yeah, listen, we don't want to send anyone to Arby's and say none of this matters. No. We definitely don't. That's not the path we want to take either. It's literally just like I said, don't buy any just top-down list, man.
Do not. Rich, you mentioned it before we get out of here. I do want to just let the people know about what you do with the worksheet and everything, because like you mentioned, I'm having you on this season long rankings projection discussion, but the best thing you do is moving with the flow of the season, which is we talked about that, right? There are pockets of these seasons, mm-hmm. and how do you adjust to those, and how do you adapt to those, and how quick? So the first, we talked about the Dallas defense, and I'm only saying this because it's producer Colin's first day back from his vacation. I'm going to ruin his life here just a little bit. We talked about how good the Dallas defense could be this year, right? Oh my God, the Dallas defense is so good, and that could really change the way we project the Dallas Cowboys offense. Let's say the first 4 weeks, the defense stinks. Let's say, Trayvon Diggs gets hurt or something disaster mm-hmm. happens or whatever. Let's just say these bad things happen to the Cowboys in the first 4 weeks of the season. How do we adjust to that? So talk to the people a little bit about what you do with the worksheet and moving with the flow of the season and why that's really important.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, that's the strength that really what I offer as an analyst is being able to point out early on trends and how kind of the calibration of the season happens. And I'm fortunate to be able to write about every game to do that. That you could check out, every season that I've been doing it now, man, almost 10 years. It's crazy. I just saw that the Konami Code article is going to be 10 years old this September. Which is crazy for me to think about. But yeah, I think that's the strength of my game, is a lot of people want to either hang on to their priors from the offseason, or they believe the player was good, or they believe this team was going to move in this general direction. But whether by injuries, performance, or just, human nature, these things have kind of shifted and altered, and people are generally slow to calibrate on those things in season. And I try to highlight those trends and for you to take advantage of, not just from season long stance of setting lineups, but from daily fantasy football and winning some money every week too, which we like to do. I feel like that's literally the hallmark of my game, is being kind of glued in and being able to highlight all of that stuff. So I am on top of this stuff in season, I promise for you. Also, I do have an actual draft kit out, and I do a lot of handholding if you do want me to do some handholding for you. Coming up in the next 2 weeks, I will have an article that shows you literally how I'm drafting every position. So if you do just want that, as opposed to reading the rankings, I will have, this is how I'm handling every position and how I'm drafting it.
Love that. We're going to talk a lot on this show about how important quarterback, approaching quarterback, the position this year, and how that trickles down, I think, to everything else. Talked a little bit about that yesterday. I think that's going to be the theme of August, really. But Rich, my dad in the industry, Sigmund Bloom, he always used to say, you can be right and wrong about a player within the course of one season. I think that's what the worksheet does so well. If you want to feel like you've got this wrong early in the season, but then you see the guy picking up steam later, Rich is going to lay that out in the worksheet. And that's really just what is definitely the strength of Rich's game. But hey, Rich, I appreciate you doing this, man. Lord Reeves himself. I kind of had really no idea where this conversation was going to go. But I think it went in a lot of interesting directions for the listeners, hopefully, but especially I think helpful directions with how to approach things in the next few weeks, and where we're getting camp videos and all this other stuff, like how we can stay grounded as we're trying to not just draft off a linear list. All right, that is going to do it for us. Appreciate Rich for stopping by. You can find us everywhere. Everywhere. We're all over on social media. My God, like so much social media. You can't get away from it. TikTok, you can follow us at Yahoo Fantasy Sports. Instagram at Yahoo Fantasy. Twitter, X, whatever it's called. You can find us there at Yahoo Fantasy. You can find me at @MattHarmon_BYB. And you better go find Rich Rebar at Lord Reeves. Of course, if you're listening to this show, you can actually watch us on YouTube. You can watch the existential dread on Rich's face as he's talking about linear rankings and everything like that. And tomorrow, you can watch Andy Behrens make his return to the show. We're going to talk about the five best and five worst ADPs of the preseason and what it can teach you about your drafts. Until then, we're out.